Welcome to Fat Chicks on Top. This podcast contains frank discussions about the body, sexuality, and occasionally uses swear words, which may not be appropriate for people under the age of 18. This podcast also uses facts, statistics, and mathematics, which may not be appropriate for liberal arts majors. And this podcast relies on science and reality, which may not be appropriate for evangelicals. Welcome to the show. You are here with your host, Auntie Vice. I am here today with somebody I'm very excited to introduce you to. Her name is Tiana Dobson, and she is a body liberation facilitator. She's also a podcaster and a blogger, and I came across her work in looking for people working in body liberation and absolutely loved what she was doing. So I invited her on. Welcome to the show.
This is super exciting. Thanks for having me, Auntie Vice.
There's so much with body positivity right now, right? Mm. And how much of that has been co-opted. That is not at all what you do.
No.
You are not a straight-sized white woman who are like, look, I have a little cellulite on my thighs, so I'm really breaking down barriers here. So let's talk a little bit about what you actually do.
Ooh, okay. So we're just going to come out the box and say, oh boy, this is hard sometimes for me to describe like what I do. And it's one of the reasons why I call myself a body liberation facilitator, because it's a vague term that I made up. So I'm going to claim that and own it. But the long and the short of it is that essentially what I'm doing is I'm getting together with people, creating space, and applying deep care and helping them to uncover this sort of simple sounding truth, which is that there's nothing wrong with their body, nothing whatsoever, regardless of what the messages they've been told, the stories they've been given, all the trauma they've been exposed to, like regardless of any of that, there's nothing wrong with your body. And I do that in a lot of different ways. I do it by sometimes one-on-one conversations. I do it in small group spaces sometimes. I do it a lot through the Fat Freedom Group Read. So we read a book together and have these very in-depth discussions. And I also do it through asking questions and letting people give their answers. So maybe that's in writing or face-to-face or what have you, but like these are kind of the things that I'm doing. And the thing is just like, we're taught so much garbage about what we're supposed to look like, what we're supposed to be doing, why we're supposed to be doing it. And all of it is specifically designed to keep you from just being who you are, because there's no money to be made from that.
For you, how did you kind of break into this field? Because you grew up with the same messaging the rest of us did.
Yes, I did. So basically, I started down this path in the way I think most people do, which is I was doing what I thought was right. I've been larger bodied since I was about 8 years old, and probably before that. But when I was 8 years old, that's when it was like really, really clear to me that I was bigger than everybody else, and it was a problem. And so I wasn't given, like, I do have to say, I'm fortunate insofar as No one said, hey, kid, come with me. We're going to put you on a diet. No one did that to me. However, my mom was constantly dieting. My stepfather was always like making small comments that are never like small. They're so heavy and they sit with me still. I'm 43 years old. It's 35 years later. I still can remember so many things that he said to me. And so very early on, I was like, okay, this body's not okay. What can we do? And like, we had Get in Shape Girl from the 80s. How about that for a deep cut? And pretty much anything my mom was doing, I would follow and practice the same thing. So I'm a lifelong dieter. I've done all the things, maybe not all the things, but I've done so many of the things. And one of the last vestiges of this was back in the early 2000s when the messaging kind of changed. So it wasn't specifically about get thin because thin is great. It was get healthy. So, you know, this is just a different branding of the same message. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to get healthy. That's what I'm going to do. And I found a health coach because I thought she was going to be the answer. And really what I found out was that I liked what she was doing. I like helping people. I enjoyed how free she seemed. And I was like, I want that for myself. So when I got married and moved to Europe, I had the opportunity to go to health coaching school. And so I started being a health coach. But it was a weird experience because I was fat still. And I was like, everything I'm being taught here is about how to eradicate a body like mine, how to shrink a body like mine, because clearly something's wrong with my body. But that didn't make sense to me because I was happy. I was like, if you look at my blood levels at the time, everything was healthy. I was active. I had a person who loved me. Like, I had a great life, except that I was fat and everybody kept telling me it was wrong. So I went on the internet, like you do, and I found health at every size. And that was the beginning of the slippery slope that brought me to where I'm at today.
So you bring up health and how we tie health to weight. There's this presumption that being fat is inherently unhealthy, but health is a very complicated idea, especially when you're fat. And just to put it out there, you don't owe anybody health, right? Right. Health is. So for you, in defining, because a lot of people will seek out body coaching and all of that, but they want to be healthy. So how do you begin by defining health in an actually healthy, you know, way for folks that's not just being thin or being in the average range for everything?
So this is a complicated thing because like the concept of health in and of itself is one that is exclusive. It's excluding. And it's done on purpose. The whole concept that we have in the West and the global North is specifically based off of a certain type and kind of body that most of us don't have, you know. And even if we did happen to have these bodies at one point or another in our lifetime, bodies change every single day. So like every day you're getting older, every day something else is different inside of you. And regardless if you had that snapshot of a body, you don't have it tomorrow. You're not going to have it in 5 years and in the future from there. So like that's one of the issues with the whole idea of chasing after health. And like, so what I do when people come to me and they're looking for health is I will entertain the idea, because how can you not want to be healthier with all the sarcastic quotes around it when in fact everything is telling you all the time that it's what you need to be. It's what you need to do. It's what you need to perform and be reaching for. It needs to be your goal. Otherwise, you're failing. And so what I'm doing with my people when they come to me, with that, you know, and like, please help me get here, is to help them understand first why they want that in the first place. And of course, there's a couple of other things that we're doing at the same time, because I'm not going to just, you're coming through the door, you're going to sit down and it's like, okay, let's talk about why you want that in the first, that's not the thing you do. But while we're having the conversation about like what health looks like for you, because that's kind of one of the first steps. If somebody's really wedded to the idea of I need to be healthy, well, like, what does health mean to you? That's really one of the first places to start, because initially we need to know what we mean when we are searching for and reaching for a thing. And then very gently, I can help someone pick that apart, why they might think they want a certain thing, why they might think they need to look a certain way. And the answer generally tends to be, it's like, well, it's white supremacy culture that makes you think and feel that way. And you're being beaten all the time because you don't fit into that. And that sucks. Nobody wants that. Everybody wants to be happy. Everybody wants to be loved and wants to feel like they belong. Everyone wants to feel valued and worthy. And if the only way that you have been told that you can get to valued and worthy is by looking a certain way and being quote unquote healthy, then yeah, it makes sense why you feel that way. So we have to unpick that and find out, like, what is it you really want? And within that also, uncover who is it you really are? Because at the base of it, that's like the kind of like kernel on the inside, the juicy center inside of my Tootsie Pop is like, I want people to be who they are. That's what I feel like body liberation really is.
I want to touch on a lot of parts in that, but let's stay on health for a minute.
Yeah.
We have seen in the last 2 or 3 years a massive rebranding of obesity, and that it is a medical condition that we can obliterate, preferably with a little shot that you can take for $2,000 plus a month and
goodness gracious,
get slim. Yes. So just in the day-to-day, how do you fight that rebranding? Because it is everywhere now that we can, you can get a shot and rent a healthy body as long as you can afford this and tolerate it.
It's a great way to put it, is that you get to rent a healthy body. That's gorgeous. Put that on a t-shirt. But it just in the day-to-day, so there's a little piece of information that I hold on to, which is wrapped in righteous rage. And that's the fact that the diet industry is worth more than $73 billion in the United States. Yeah, with a B. In the United States. This is not counting all of Europe or, you know, all of the other Western countries, Canada, not even that. We're talking about the US, $73 billion. That is a gigantic budget. That's a gigantic amount of money that is all, like, imagine the PR budget in that, right? Like the public relations budget, the budget that is buying ads on your favorite social media platform or in between your TV shows or on your YouTube watching, like all of that money's there, right? And so I'm always holding on to that. When I'm playing my fun water sort puzzle, because I have that kind of brain, and in between the lovely satisfaction of finishing one level and moving to the next one, I'm getting the ad for simple exercise so I can lose weight and burn fat. The thing that I have to remind myself of when I start to feel myself going down that little slope of maybe I do need to get a little bit of this is, $73 billion. $73 billion. This is just a tiny slice of that. And that's why you feel this way. There's nothing wrong with you. Could I be more fit? Absolutely. Could I find more movement? Absolutely. Do I need to lose weight? No. Absolutely not. And there's so basically I have to have this like constant conversation going on with myself, which sounds exhausting, and it is. But a $73 billion industry is the reason for that exhaustion. So I just try to direct my rage in the correct direction.
That needs to be up on a big side. $73 billion is going to make you feel this way.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. You can't avoid it. It's everywhere. I mean, like I was bedbound for 2 months last summer because for some reason I started having terrible tendonitis in my feet and my ankles. And when I got a doctor to come and visit me at my house because I could not walk, she very quickly offered me Ozempic. And I was like, hold on, hold on. Can we talk about my feet? Like, I'm having trouble getting out of bed and even just going to the toilet. Why are we talking about weight loss drugs? Why are we talking about that? And it was so frustrating because it always came back to that. And in the end, when I finally, you know, because I had a look. Because how could you not look? $73 billion, you got to go look. Maybe this is finally the answer to making all of you leave me alone about my body, you know? But after I looked at people's experiences and the actual fact that, yeah, you really, really, it works really, really well. But like you said earlier, Auntie Vice, you rent that result until you can't have your shot anymore. And I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do that again. I've done it so much for 35 years. Not 35 years, but for something like 30 years of my life, I was doing that to myself. And I'm like, I don't want that anymore. I'm fine. Could it be better? Absolutely. But I'm fine. So leave me alone. And the doctor left me alone because I didn't want to take her shot.
I had Reagan Chastain on the show last season, and I adore Reagan. I adore her newsletter. And one of the things she says is when that comes up, she always looks at the physician and said, okay, I understand that's your prescription for me, but what is the medically ethical advice you'd give a thin person?
Absolutely.
Because when you're bigger bodied, course, they think everything is because you're fat, even when it's not, even when it's diseases thin people get.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You bring up how this is tied into white supremacy, and it is.
Everything.
if
it makes you feel bad, it's because of that.
All the negative things are tied into white supremacy. And that is then, of course, tied into capitalism.
Oh, for sure.
So you have people coming with all different experiences, all different backgrounds. How do you begin to bring this up? Because there's so many people who are resistant, regardless of their own race or lived experience, people think it's a shortcut to say, well, it's just white supremacy. They think you're blaming something that's, you know.
Yeah.
So how do you begin to broach that topic with people who may be resistant to it?
Oh, wow. Well, first and foremost, I have become very good at picking my battles. I am not going to spend my one precious life and my my fleeting precious moments on trying to have a conversation with someone who isn't interested in learning. So that's first and foremost. But if you're interested in learning and you're just stuck, well, that's different. We can have a conversation. The great thing that I have in my arsenal is the fact that there are gorgeously brilliant people out in the world who have created things that I can refer people to and I can literally point to that help to like take the Cliff's notes that I'm using, and like I can tell them, here's a resource where you can actually go and dig into the details. So the first big one of these is Fearing the Black Body, The Racial Origins of Fat Phobia. So this is a book that was written by Sabrina Strings, which literally details how white supremacy culture was created to justify the transatlantic slave trade, the stealing of African peoples from their lands, and the forcible exportation of them to other places to force them to work and into chattel slavery, which basically means that any children that they may bear are then also enslaved. And like everything that happened there was simply because they needed to justify what they were doing. Because in spite of the fact that African people had darker skin than European people, they look the same. They have the same, they also have the same kinds of bodies. They're doing the same types and kinds of things. Though some things look different, they can still be recognized as human beings. And so that process of dehumanization was absolutely necessary. So Dr. Strings writes this wonderful, wrote this wonderful book that gives you all the details of how, like, bit by bit, this system was woven together. And so, like, I give people Cliff's Notes because I read the book and I led a Fat Freedom Group read where we dug into and really digested that book really, really slowly. Oh, it was painful, but like it was super necessary and wildly informative. So that's one thing I refer people to. And if you are someone who's like, I'm not a reader, that's too much work, or it's too emotionally taxing to get through something like that, because I promise you it will be. Dr. Strings has given quite a few interviews. So those are the Cliff's Notes of her work. So I refer people to that. But also, Deshaun Harrison wrote I wouldn't even say a companion piece. It was, it's taking that work and moving it further into lived experience. So Deshaun Harrison, they wrote Belly of the Beast, which is talking about the lived experience of Blackness and fatness and transness, which are things that like are so real and necessary to have as part of the conversation. But essentially, like, I just like to have conversations with people to see where they're at. And then I like to ask questions. Do you know this? Did you think that? Where is this coming from? Whose voice is that really? Because actually, I don't like conflict.
Well, and I find it with a lot of folks difficult to have conversations around race where somebody doesn't feel attacked.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's approaching it through a nonviolent verbal communication pattern. Still, people, this is something we all hold.
Absolutely.
These are, yeah.
Absolutely.
You talk about the lived experience of, you know, that Deshaun brings forward of Blackness and transness and fatness. How much of your own lived experience informs your work?
So much of it. I mean, that's the thing, is like my work is not purely conceptual. I do have to say, I do talk about things sometimes that I don't have lived experience of. Like, for example, I don't identify as trans. I have questions about my gender, but I don't believe at this point that I'm trans. And but ultimately, what it comes down to is that everything that I do starts from the foundation of my lived experience of otherness. And I know it can be really reductive to say that once you've experienced otherness in one way, you can extrapolate that to other different types and kinds of otherness. But it is true in a way, because you can take your experience as other in one arena and think about like how you felt. And you can then take that experience and those emotions and apply them to having compassion for someone who is having a different experience than you. So like, I'm biracial, I'm queer, and like kind of everything about me is for the most part not fitting neatly into any box, which means that I have a beautiful experience of never being enough of this or enough of that. And so because of that, that's what I try to build into my work. Like that's the cradle that all of my work fits into, is how do you belong in this conversation? And I think that's the thing that really helps people have a hard conversation with me that they can't have with other people, is first and foremost, like, you can feel attacked. I'm not attacking you. I'm allowing you to feel how you feel. But I also want you to understand that you feel that way because we are all victims of these systems of oppressions, while also being perpetrators of these systems as well.
You bring up the feeling of otherness, and that's, most of my listeners have it at least in one form of their life, right? I'm an old, cranky, disabled, queer, non-binary person. So like, I get that form of otherness. And one of the things when you're bigger bodied or when you're fat is that is just one more intersecting identity that brings on oppression. And there is a tough conversation going on in the little corners of the body liberation space about the desire to eliminate that otherness in one area of your life as a way of getting thin and supporting bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
Versus just accepting the fat body and realizing that it's just part of the otherness.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if you had had any thoughts in that area about reducing the desire to reduce otherness in one area of your life.
This one's really hard because I see it, I experience it, and I understand it because I experience it. I know that if I were less fat, that things would be easier for me physically. Not because my body doesn't work certain ways because of my fatness, but because people treat me a certain way because of my fatness. Like the desire to conform, to perform, is just a way that we try to find safety in this world that is so, so unsafe. And so I have so much compassion for people who are making these very difficult decisions, because by choosing to be fat, by choosing to be like every day, choosing to be okay with my body being the size that it is, I lose people. There are people who they don't want to hang out with me because they feel judged by my fatness, or they want to judge my fatness and I won't let them. There are people I have lost because of that. And I'm somebody who's chronically ill and I have periods of more or less disability. There's less stuff I can do. And I've lost people because of that. And the challenge really of being someone who values being unapologetically who I am means that I have to continually practice the skills that allow me to grieve and be in the discomfort of the fact that I'm not for everyone and not everyone is for me. But I understand how people can feel like let down or feel judged or feel like just extreme disappointment. These are all manifestations of grief. We are grieving for someone making a choice that is inherently saying, I don't want to be like you. And that's hard. And it really, really sucks. And I just think that, like, on one hand, we need to be able to allow people to make choices for their bodies and their lives and their situations, simply because we don't know all the things. We're not living that life. We're not living in that body. We're not living in that situation. So we all will judge. This is a fact. But, like, we have to have compassion because the world is hard for people and exponentially harder for people who have lots of different types and kinds of marginalizations. The further you are out from fitting into that tiny little box of what is quote unquote ideal, the harder your life becomes. And not like, oh, it's 2 times harder, it's 3 times. It's exponential. It's exponential. We are multiplying upon multiplying upon multiplying when you add another identity that is outside of that box. And so if you're somebody who's like, if I just shave off this one because this one's the easy one, I feel you. But also, it's hard. All of this is hard. All of it's hard.
It is. It is. And when you are fat, you cannot leave the house without getting feedback from the public. Like,
it's the worst.
One of the I host the Dyke Night here up in my area. And
yes.
So one of the things I do is I get there before everybody else to get stuff set up. We do it at local bars and restaurants, and I'm in a very red area of California. but one of the first things I do is get stuff to eat.
Yeah.
So as the fat girl, I'm eating when people get there. But, you know, for a lot of people, even something like, and I order junk food when I go to make it okay for other people to eat pizza, yes, to eat fried. Like, I'm not going to order a salad and do the performative health thing. I want people to feel comfortable.
Exactly.
But to do that is a big emotional lift at times.
Yeah.
So for you, where do you draw the strength to continue to be okay in this body that has multiple marginalizations and you can't just leave them at home when you walk out the door?
That's a fantastic question. That's a great question. So I'm looking for the answer. Like, I always want my answers to be simple. I want them to be easy. I want it to be like, here's this 4-step thing that you do. And every step is just like, take a breath, shake your shoulders back and keep it moving. You know, like, I want it to be that. And it's never that. So I apologize in advance. But for me, there are kind of two things that I really hold on to that keep me able to move forward every day and, like, continue to live this life. One of them is that I have a few values that are, like, so important to me. And the first one really is, like, I want to be kind. I want to be a kind person. I practice being kind, and that kindness also extends to myself. I'm not always good at it, but I try to be kind to myself and to everyone I encounter. Because Oh my God, do we need more kindness in this world? Please. So I always try to have that. Like, I want to be kind as I can, and spread the kindness so that everywhere I go, there's a little bit more kindness, right? So I'm rooting into my values of kindness, my value of like honesty. I want to be honest to myself, with myself, and to other people as much as I can, because I do know that full honesty is not always safe or real for some people, depending on a situation. Another thing is like, I want to be wholly human, like fully human, which means that I embrace the fact that sometimes this body is stinky and gross. Poop actually happens and things don't work sometimes. It is what it is, right? Like, this is my body and this is the experience of humanity. And those are like three of them. But then the other thing that also holds me down, so this other little sort of totem, I suppose you could say, if I have an 8-year-old child and a lot of my negative experience of myself and my body and the world has so much to do with the fact that I had low capacity caregivers when I was a child. And through choices and situations and lots of hard work, I have been able to create more capacity for myself in my life, which is amazing to be able to look at what I have access to as far as resources is concerned, and like see where I am versus where I came from. And so because I have all these resources and I work to skill myself up in how to have a relationship, how to have a conversation, how to set boundaries, how to be compassionate and kind, I work on that with my child. My baby is my coal mine canary. If I cannot be kind to this tiny human being that I created with my body, then that means that I need to go and get some resources. I need to go refill my cup. I need to go care for myself, get some support, and expand my capacity, because that child doesn't deserve to be a punching bag. He just doesn't. So, like, it's these two things that I hold on to and I carry with me all the time. And it's about practicing, because I fail a lot, because I'm a human being, because I live life and it sucks. But I continue to come back, because coming back to the practice is about building that kindness and making space for that kindness. And I try not to beat myself up, though I'm not good at that sometimes. But I always try to come back and remind myself to practice.
Part of liberation is passing it on to the next generation so that they don't have to undo it again, like trying to undo it.
That's right.
So how do you talk to your child about weight and bodies?
This is a great one. So we are a naked household. I grew up in a naked household, but we were all girls and, you know, with my mom. So like everybody had the same kind of body, which was fine. But then like now I'm here in this situation and I have a husband who is a cis man. And I have a child who is assigned male at birth. And so we have different bodies in this household, but I don't hide my body from my kid because it's a body. There's no reason to hide it. I mean, like, that's That's part of the problem, is the taboos that are created and the weird way we treat nudity and bodies. Like, come on, let's not do that. So I allow my child to see my body. I allow him to touch me, you know, and like, I know there are some people who are going to be like, okay, that's weird. And I feel you. Sometimes it's weird because I was raised as somebody who's like, oh, no, you can't do that kind of stuff. But like, you know, he has the ability, like I will allow him to like touch my breasts and like sometimes, you know, they're fun and they're soft and they're large and they make, you know, they jiggle and shit. So like, why would he not want to play with them? But like, you know, I do practice like, okay, that's, you know, if he starts to come toward the nipple, it's like, okay, no, not there. That's not okay. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I do is have gentle boundaries. This is okay touch and that's not okay touch. And I give him the ability to do the same. So we're not forcing hugging or kissing or any kind of physical contact whatsoever on the child. If child is like, you know, pulling away or don't or stop, okay, we stop. And it's that simple. These are sort of the rules where we're practicing consent. We're practicing like okay with nudity, but with, you know, with boundaries, like, okay, make sure you sit on the towel before you put the towel down before you sit on the sofa, you know, things like that. But basically, like, we're not hiding bodies from each other. And, you know, I will tell him things like, oh, I love your belly. Look at your chubby, chubby cheekies. They're so nice and soft, you know, and I give him a lot of praise about his body, about himself, the things he can do. Like, you know, when he makes a joke or when he laughs, you know, I like to tell him a lot, you're my favorite person. And then like, he asks me sometimes, you know, because of course there's the, hey, there's nothing wrong with being fat. Because I have a chunky kid, big old little brick house. And sometimes he comes to me and he'll say, oh, your big, big belly. You're so warm. And I'm like, yes, I am so warm. You're right. It's because I have this big belly. And he'll ask, why do you have this big belly? Well, because this is the kind of body that I have. Well, why do you have this kind of body? Because this is just the one that I have. And there's lots of different types and kinds of bodies. And I try to expose him to lots of different types and kinds of bodies. So things that are appropriate for his size or for his age. And there are some great books and resources available for children that are like body affirming and giving them like, God, I love this timeline that we're living in some ways. The fact that these resources exist where there are lots of like visuals and things that children can experience. But yeah, we have conversations, open and honest conversations about these kinds of things. And I always, like, even when I accidentally fat shamed my kid, which was really frustrating because I was talking about the fact that he's growing out of his clothes. And I used the phrase that when he wears something that is too small for him because he's getting larger, because he's getting older, I said he, you know, he looks like a sausage in those clothes. And he overheard this and misinterpreted what I said as me judging him for the size of his body as far as his fatness is concerned, when in fact, what I was talking about was the fact that he was just large. I mean, he's large. He's just big, this kid. But he was like really hurt. And he immediately did something that I was really surprised about, which is he went and found a workout app and started working out. And this only lasted a few hours. But when I found out what he was doing and I realized what happened, I apologized to him. And we had a conversation where I told him there's nothing wrong with his body. And like, you know, I think that apologies are super important, especially when you're a parent and you've done something wrong. Because number one, like, you're a human being and you need to teach your child what it's like to be a human being, but also that you're fallible and that, like, if you make a mistake, an apology can happen and should happen. It's affirming. It's humanizing. Like, my child's a person, regardless of the fact that he's only 8. And I apologized to him about that. And I was so upset. I was so upset for so long because I was like, oh no, I can't believe I did that to him. But also, I make mistakes because I'm a person. And so we talk about it and I make sure that I apologize because I want him to understand that I'm not right because I'm your mom. Like, I'm just a person too, and I'm trying, and we can try together.
You know? And I think that's so critical. Like, I can't fathom either of my parents apologizing to me when I was a kid for what's right.
Right? Oh. Yeah.
That would have been such good modeling, but I grew up in a generation, I'm 50, I grew up in a generation where we didn't have it.
No, exactly. Exactly.
So, a little dramatic shift. I'm trying to get everything in and honor the time frame that we set. Let's talk a little bit about your book club.
Oh, yes. Yes. I'll be honest. I fought with myself because I was like, I don't want to be the book club lady. But I realized that I was shaming myself for something that's ridiculous to shame myself for. And I do this sometimes where I'm just like, you're not doing enough, you know, because you're not out there in the street doing the protest. You're not doing enough. And it's like, no. Reading a book and interrogating a culture of oppression and dominance is as useful as going to the protest. And sometimes can go further, to be honest. So yeah. So I do what's called the Fat Freedom Group Read, and it's a book club, but it's done a little differently because I'm somebody who gets really frustrated with the traditional book club format, which is, okay, this month we read this book and then we get together one time for like 90 minutes and we get some drinks and some snacks and we talk about the entire book in between conversations about all the other things. And there's just no way that you're going to talk about an entire book in that period of time, especially a book of substance. There's just no way. I mean, even if it's just a fun book, there's so many things to talk about. Like, we don't have time to talk about all of them. And so based off of like what I want out of a like conversation around a book, I made the group read. So what we do is because I like books and I like hard books. But also, there is no way that I would have finished Fearing the Black Body by myself. I tried. I got to chapter 3, and I couldn't go back to it. And it's because it was too hard to do by myself. But when I made the group read, I was able to finish it. And that's because we read very gently and very slowly. So I break the book down, depending on the length of the book, into chapters or parts. And each chapter or part, we have 2 weeks to read. And so that gives you time to like be a whole human being, to have resistance, take care of your life, yourself, your children. And then even maybe like actually open your book, right? And then we have a discussion, a live discussion call after the finish of each reading section. So every second week for 90 minutes, where all we talk about is that one section, which means we can get really deep and really granular. And also sometimes we go down rabbit holes and get on these wonderful tangents that are so beautiful. And we just dig into it. And in between those things, between like your 2 weeks for reading and the live discussion calls, I also formulate a couple of reflection prompts for you that you're that I send to people by email to help you kind of zoom in on and deconstruct some of the things that are happening in the book. Also, I like to try. I don't know if I'm achieving it, but I try. I try to help you relate yourself and your lived experience to what we're reading, because I like to read books in the group read that are written by people with marginalized identities. So lots of Black fat women authors we're reading, things like that. And unfortunately, well, I was gonna say, unfortunately, not a lot of Black fat women come, but that's not unfortunate. It is what it is. It's a fact. But the fact is, a lot of people who do come, they are not Black fat women, which means that they have differences in their lived experience and their identities. And sometimes folks have trouble seeing themselves or relating to what they're reading. And that's what I'm trying to do with the reflection prompts, because yeah, we're having very different experiences, but a lot of it echoes and ripples through each other. So yeah, that's what we're doing in the Fat Freedom Group Read. We even have an online community space. So if you're somebody who's reading at 2 o'clock in the morning and you're like, oh my God, I need to say a thing out loud, you can go on there and do that. It's beautiful. So yeah, we're practicing resistance. We're practicing unlearning. We're practicing community. We're practicing gentleness. All of that in the Fat Freedom Group Read.
Love that. What are you currently grateful for?
Oh my. Oh my goodness. What am I currently grateful for? It is the month of January as we are recording this, very tail end of it. And I live in Bavaria in Germany. And for the new year in Germany, they celebrate with these, they're basically jelly donuts. And they are delicious. And I love them. And I'm very grateful that pretty much every bakery I go to in this little city that I live in has them available, because they have been giving me so much joy.
Oh my God, now I want a donut. just to go to lunch after this with a friend, I'm like, I think I'm having a donut and coffee.
Yes.
If our listeners want to find you, join your book club, reach out, work with you, plug all your sites and socials.
I love this. Thank you. So yeah, if you want to find me and hang out with me and see what I'm about and dig into my world, one of the best places to find me is on Instagram. I am at I am Tyana Dodson on there. You also can check out my upcoming stuff. We'll be doing another group read in the near future, because Vanessa Rochelle Lewis's book Reclaiming Ugly just came out, which I'm super excited to read. So we'll be doing that, and you can learn more about that either through the link in my bio on Instagram or from my website, which is tyanadodson.com. I have a podcast, which I always forget to talk about because it's so infrequent that I record, but it's called Live Your Best Fat Life. And you can find that wherever podcasts are sold, but yes, wherever fine podcasts, wherever you listen to them, wherever you find these things. So come check me out. And also, like, I was on TikTok and loving it for a hot second. So if you want to see some like older stuff where I'm being naughty and having a bit of fun, you can check me on TikTok, which is actually at I am Tyana Dodson there as well. So yeah.
And listeners, we'll have all of those links and more for you in the show notes. As always, thank you so much for joining us. And this has been wonderful. And listeners, check out Tyana's work. It's fantastic. If you like this show, you're going to love what she does. So yes, thank you for joining us from Germany today.
Oh, you're welcome so much. Thank you for having me, Auntie Vice. It was a pleasure.
Texas of the world.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Fat Chicks on Top. Please like, subscribe, and review our podcast on whatever platform you listen to it on. If we like your review, we may even read it online. This has been an Auntie Vice production. Producer and host, Rebecca Blanton. Audio production by Sharon Smith. Music by David Manga. And more music by Sharon Smith. For more information about Fat Chicks on Top, please visit our website for all things Fat Chicks at fatchicksontop.com.